is Sportsfeld. We are back together once more. Before we get into anything, Jake, great work last week on the show. Really, we were really impressed.
I'm really happy you're back.
It's challenging, isn't it?
It's really hard. I felt like I was going on way too long.
No, not in the slightest.
And then also, I don't know if you had this, but like, because we're sort of here to catch each other,
mm-hmm.
I had like immediate anxiety that I said something like really dumb or like offensive.
Sure.
It was just like in the moment, but I missed it.
Not in the slightest.
So that's good. Also, the people don't need to know how many times I re-recorded and deleted my take on Kevin Kiermaier getting hit.
Tough,
because
eh?
I was afraid people were going to get mad at me.
Sure. Absolutely. It's so funny. Before we took off, we left on Wednesday afternoon. So we left Wednesday at 2 and the Jays game was at 3. So we were, it's a 4-hour flight. Basically, we landed as the game ended. And taking off, I was like, boy, Jake doesn't really have much to talk about. Because it was like, you know, the Jays had been playing at the time we had taken off. They were 1-1 against Tampa. And the card thing had happened, but nothing had really come of it. So I was like, I don't know if he's going to have... Like, it's going to be tough because I was lucky, right? In my solo episode, the Jays hadn't lost in the week that you were gone. So I was like, okay, this is the playoff push. And then we talked the week after and they had continued to play. And then they were sort of back down to, like, you know, winning 4 of 6. It was sort of regular. And then we get off the plane and complete pandemonium. So I'm glad it was an easy, you know, 10 to 15 minutes to sort of talk about.
I don't know what this means for the country, but this is tremendous content. That's what I thought.
I thought you handled it great. And my wife and I, we had spent the day walking through Stanley Park in Vancouver, and we were basically exhausted. So we took the afternoon to like get back into. Listen, I'll say this: something we realized next time we are booking a vacation is to take a question of ourselves: is what we really want to do to lay in bed? Because I gotta tell you, laying in the king size hotel bed, up there with any event or like site that we saw.
It's funny when you say that. When we got back from, not even when we were still in PEI, we were like, should we do, next time let's just get a cottage and not do anything.
You and I are on we basically had the exact. Listen, this isn't to say your time on the East Coast wasn't great and my time on the West Coast wasn't great.
I had a wonderful time.
But also, like, just sleeping and laying around and, like, going to bed at 1:30 in the afternoon is, like, maybe this is all I really want out of life. Great times in Vancouver.
I learned that. I always feel like, because I'm a very, like, city vacation person, like, mm-hmm. I'm not a big let's go to resort and, like, sit. Like, I can do it for a few days. Even, like, certain cottages, I can go for, like, 3 or 4 days, and I'm like, I need to do something.
Yeah.
But then, like, every now and then, it's like, I just want to sit and eat, and that's it.
We crammed quite a bit into, you know, 4 days, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, even with a 5-hour delay on the way out, which was not great. Our 8 o'clock flight ended up taking off at 2 o'clock. So it goes. It was a great time. Vancouver, full of lovely people. A little different than I expected, I guess, is sort of the way that I would put Vancouver. I don't know if you've been to Vancouver.
I've been to Vancouver many times, yeah. The mountains are beautiful.
Yes.
That's what I'll say.
The city, like, I basically was like, in the city, if you're not looking at the ocean and the mountains, like, oh, this is basically the same as Toronto. Like, it was just like, there's cities, there's infrastructure, there's buildings, there's,
some people are nice, some people aren't.
Exactly right. Public transit. People are nice. People are not nice. But in general, we ate very well. We saw some great things. And mostly it was the people. My friend Josh was a great host. I got to do Blocked Party. That was tons of fun. Almost as likely that we get a Blocked Party boost than like me being on TV or going on the radio.
I hope so. I think I would like a Blocked Party boost. And I would like Blocked Party to... lend us some money, is what I would like.
Well, I will say the first thing I did when I got back, I immediately bought a new microphone. I don't know if the audio is any different for our listeners, but I was immediately like, I could never record another moment of audio on a USB mic. They have a beautiful studio in John Collins' apartment. They do a great show there. And I was like, oh, I need to immediately buy a new microphone. So I immediately did a microphone and what do you call this? Audio interface. So I'm it's my new thing. But I'll say this. While I was in Vancouver, again, Wednesday was the Beanball on Kiermaier, which you covered last week. Thursday, blown out by the Twins. Friday, lost to the Twins, and Lourdes Gurriel gets his hand stepped on. So the first 3 days I was there, I was like trying to pretend that it wasn't totally ruining my experience with the fact that the Seattle Mariners, with their negative run differential, caught and passed the Blue Jays in the time. Like, impossible. Of all the things that are possible, given where they were when we left and where they are, you know, during the thing, I was like, of all the things to be possible, falling behind the Mariners seemed impossible. For the record, we are recording this before Wednesday's game. So if they beat Gerrit Cole, doom and gloom, completely unqualified. But boy, I did not enjoy Tuesday's game at all, basically.
I'm going to be honest before we get into it here. I think that for the most part, you and I are pretty good at being somewhat rational.
Sure.
On this show. I think we're good at putting things in perspective sometimes. I think we're good at taking the long view. That's not going to happen this week. We're in the thick of it, and I am completely incapable of giving anything resembling a rational point of view on this week's games, I think. Like, I know 2 weeks ago I was all like, well, you know, this is all we wanted. No. No, no, no. I would like them to win
is yeah. what we wanted. A proclamation that I made, this in a DM, and I was saving this take for this show this week, Jake, and I promise that I make to our listeners and to you as my friend. After this year, I am never again going to say something like, all I want is for them to be competitive in September. That's so dumb. What were we thinking?
Right?
I want them to have the division sewn up on September 20th.
Yeah.
Like, and 2 weeks of nothing. Like, win 105 games. Why do we do this to ourselves? Why do we say, you know?
Even like the 2016 team that like almost blew it, but we're still in first place.
Yeah.
Going into the last week. That's fine. You can make it close, but like be in front. If they win this and then this team loses this, I hate it. I hate that last night. And we were talking about this when we were texting during the game last night. I hate that last night we had to go, ooh, the Orioles are winning.
Yeah, that's no way to live, is to spend the last few weeks being like, I hope the Orioles and Nationals win their games. That is no way to go through the end of September.
Awful. Awful.
Last night, Jays losing. You know, again, we do a pretty good job during the week of not inundating each other with our takes so that we can be fresh for the show. But it was a we had to text the whole game sort of thing. Knew the Stanton home run was coming. Absolutely filled with dread the entire game. When the throw from left hit, I think it was Urshela in the back. I collapsed onto the floor, and the dog thought I was being attacked. I remarked to you, I was like, I don't remember how did I sit through a playoff game? How did we do that? And then you reminded me, we basically didn't. Like, I more or less paced during that. We went through 14 inning baseball game. Like,
yeah, in the playoffs.
Jesus.
I think that this is going to sound very not analytical, not fact-based.
People expect deep analytics from us. So.
But like last night really just felt, even when they had the lead for a minute, it never really felt like they were going to win that one.
Mm-hmm.
Like to your point, like even before Stanton hit the home run, when that ball hit Urshela in the back, it was like, okay. It was one of those. I see. That's how it felt kind of to me. And I, you know, it's frustrating because like they were forcing everything last night. A lot of just like Bo's base running aside, a lot of dumb swings, a lot of like just not, they just didn't look settled all night. But yet, if they win tonight, and then imagine if they were also to win tomorrow, it's right there. It's so annoying.
Mm-hmm. You did a good job because I was, you and I are going to Thursday's game. This comes out Thursday morning, so we're going to be at tonight's game. And I very easily get fatalistic, and I was like, there's no chance that you and I see anything other than the nail get driven into the coffin of the Blue Jays season. But the reality is, of course, that they are. It's almost more about the Red Sox right now than it is about the Yankees, even though the Yankees, of course, are right in front of them. Yeah, keeping that optimism that they have beaten Gerrit Cole recently. They have Berríos, who is a good. They have good pitchers, right? They get Ray after this, and then they get Baltimore. So, as much as I wanted to believe it was over. Maybe not. I maintain that it's probably going to have to be a 4-2 week, which, you know, at minimum, and that means they are allowed to lose one more game. There's a chance, of course, that we listen to this tomorrow morning and we feel so stupid because they've already lost, and then we're like, all hope is gone. But yeah, you're totally right. And this is a sort of a fish got to swim, birds got to fly sort of thing. Is that inning they had a real chance? I want to say it was the sixth, where Vladdy led off with a walk, and then Bo. First pitch swinging double play. He moves to second on a wild pitch. He gets thrown out at third on a playing the show. As soon as the ball gets dropped, you press L1 and move to the next base out. And then Hernandez walked, and then Gurriel goes down on two terrible swings and misses on terrible pitches. And it's just like, obviously, it's that dichotomy, right, of the birds got to fly. This team has been among the most successful teams ever on the first pitch. But also, like, this guy coming in, this nobody that the Pirates released that the Yankees are using in their bullpen, walked Vladdy, walked Teoscar, nowhere near the plate on the two swings from Lourdes. You're like, I would love just a smidge of patience to allow this guy to get himself into trouble. And that was, for me, that was like, oh, this is just not happening. And concerning.
Yeah. And then, of course, Stanton hits it the inning after.
Of course.
But, yeah, I am a little... I mean, again, this is going to be heard tomorrow, so potentially completely random. But, you know, they got to beat Gerrit Cole tonight. And correct. That's really what it comes down to.
And that is, and I think our friend Drew Fairservice is somebody who has put this very well in the past. I can't remember what year this would have been. Might have been 2013. I think it was on Getting Blanked. This is how old this idiom is and how much it stuck with me. That part of what makes baseball great is that September is also the playoffs, right? Like, the Jays are playing a playoff game tonight. It cannot technically be a playoff game, but
yeah,
this was three playoff games against the Yankees, and the reality,
even against the Orioles, are like, it feels lessened because it's the Orioles, but like, it's a playoff game. The whole week is the playoffs.
I think that's absolutely correct, and the reality of the playoffs is, you know, in big games, you go against the best pitchers in the American League. You go against Gerrit Cole. You're going to have to go against, you know, if you make it to the playoffs, you're going to have to go against the Rays' best starters. You got to go against the best starters on Houston. It's just the reality. But I will tell you, you were a witness to this. I was playing all the hits of Self-Loathing last night. I was on to the, like, why can't we be in the Central? Because we watched the Cardinals. The Cardinals doing the champagne celebration in the NL Central because they've won 87 games. And it's like, oh, that's enough to clinch with five games left. You can win 87 games and clinch a wild card spot. It just drives me absolutely insane because, man, oh, man, in the Central, 90 wins means you have locked up the division for a week already.
Yeah. I mean, like, if they were in the AL Central, they'd have, like, 104 wins right now. And I'm not exaggerating.
Oh boy. It's just, this is it. This is the intensity that we waited all year long for. It is concerning to me, of course, that as we speak, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is, I believe, 0 for his last 18 at bats.
Yeah. And he was, I don't know if it was, maybe I wasn't viewing, but it looks like he's just like out ahead of everything. Like, he looked on top of every pitch last night. But far be it from me to criticize Vladimir Guerrero's hitting, but
of course.
Now's when I've been thinking about it all afternoon. I really need just like jump on him on the bottom of the first in the bottom of the first tonight.
Would be nice. Would certainly be nice.
Be so nice.
Because I am taking the strategy that I'm going to you know, be as strongly word it as I can in my disappointment in Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to the end of being proven wrong and embarrassed. I think is sort of my strategy here. Is I'm going to say like he looks like he's pressing. He looks like he's trying to make too much happen with every single at bat. He looks like he has the weight of performing on his shoulders. I think that's pretty close to complete reverse jinx. I want to be like, you know, if he was the real MVP, this is the week he'd be showing up. Are we sure he's not below Stanton on the MVP? Are we sure? It sure seems like Marcus Semien is the guy that's actually the best player on the infield. Maybe Vladdy's, you know, by war, maybe he's the third best player behind Semien and Ray. Putting all that on the table as potential takes that I am hoping to have thrown back in my face. That's the only strategy that I have left at this point.
Yeah, it all seems... I don't know. It's... I was thinking about this last night and how, to your point, these are must-win, basically playoff games.
100%.
But they're not the playoffs.
Right.
And it got me thinking about as a Jays fan, what do I want out of this year? And what do Jays fans in general want out of this year? And I don't really have an answer for you. Because like I was thinking about it, let's say they go 4-1 in their final five, and that's enough to get them into the second wild card. And they go to New York next Tuesday and get smoked. And they lose in the wild card game. Is that enough? Is that better? Because that is technically making the playoffs.
This is the danger.
But it's
this
not
is...
making the playoffs. Is it if they make the first round and lose to the Rays? Is that enough? Is it, you know, what is the... Obviously, the goal is always a World Series. I'm not suggesting that not winning the World Series is necessarily good or an accomplishment. But I'm wondering what, and I don't think we'll probably have an answer for this until a couple weeks after the season ends, whenever that may be. But I was just wondering, like, what is the feeling, I guess, to steal Katie Heindel's basketball feelings? What's the baseball feeling on what we want from the Jays this year?
Yeah, I think that's something that we're going to need perspective and hindsight on, because it's one of those things, right? The old classic, if we had told you before the season sort of thing, is if I gave you 91 wins, which is your 4-1 prediction, 91 wins and, you know, a wild card loss at Yankee Stadium, I think most people would say, wow, that's a really good year. And zooming out, it probably is a good year. It probably already is a good year, right? I think we were both pretty close to 86, 87 wins was our preseason guesses.
Mm-hmm.
They've won 87 games. That's already happened. Technically, everything that happens from here on out is above expectation. That is sort of what we are, the level we laid for ourselves. They are already overperforming, but it's difficult because expectations shift and change in the moment, and it is hard to say now that if next week our episode is like, well, the Jay season's over,
right?
It's gonna be hard to swallow.
That's exactly it. And I think that's also been tempered by the fact that I don't know about you, but going to the season, I thought if they won 87 games, they were the second wild card,
handily,
easy. And I think that's also kind of thrown preseason and mid-season expectations for a bit of a loop.
Who really fucked this up.
Yeah, 100%. The fact they're at 87 wins, and like they could literally go win 91 games and not make it.
Absolutely. They could, exactly right. They could win 90 games and finish fourth that in the division. Like that's. Yeah. That's absurd. You're back to, and I think it's sort of funny how the conversation changes a little bit. Not that it's a direct correlation, but you sort of get back to what we've talked about in the past in story times and things like that. Is the like 2012? They won 80. They won not. Pardon me. Not 2012. Like 2008 or 2006 when they win 87 games. They won 87 and 75, and it's like, man, the Black Jays wasn't a great team. It's like they were 87-75 and finished second in the division. They just so happened to finish out of the wild card because there were three 90-win teams in the Central that year. It just it's sort of not fair, the break that they have gotten here and the way that this has come together. It's wild. And I would love to pretend that no matter what, it's been a success, but it's going to be hard to come on here next week. And if we're saying, whether it's missing the playoffs or losing the wild card game, that we're, you know, as we expected, the season is over the first weekend of October.
Yeah. And I think that's, kind of what I was sort of getting at in terms of like the long view, in that if they win 90 games and they don't make it, in like 2 months, we'll be like, wow, what a great season.
Mm-hmm.
But in the moment, because we all thought 90 games was going to be enough to at least play a wild card game, which like technically, I guess it still might be, but probably not. It's like, it really has thrown everything out of whack. And I think about, and we've talked this, compared this before, I think about like the Matthews Maple Leafs and that Washington series, where I was like, wow, this is the start of something. And maybe it'll feel like that with the Jays, but for some reason it doesn't.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's the Semien and Ray of it all. Like, I think maybe if they win 90 games, let's say they go 3-2 to finish the year, they don't make the wild card game. But then, you know, in 2 months, Semien and Ray are coming back and they're basically just running it back with everyone a year older, plus probably a bullpen addition or two. That's probably easier to be like, okay, what a great season. They can build on 90 wins with everyone coming back, a full season of George Springer and not playing in Dunedin and Buffalo.
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to dig obviously more into the Jays here in a second. To finish off your point, Jake, yeah, I think, you know, there are going to be people, idiots, I'll say that quite frankly, idiots who look at that and say, well, aren't you just bringing back the shell of an X-win team? But I think you nailed it, that you can't discount the fact that they were basically 500 in Dunedin and basically 500 in Buffalo and have been like 21-10 in Rogers Center. Obviously, a lot of that is the first week and it was the bounce of being back, but that also is a run that includes Berríos, who's going to be in the fold next year. And I think if you were bringing that back and your first four, right, is Ray, Ryu, Berríos, and I always forget somebody in this, Manoah, that's, you're crazy to say, oh, that's just the shell of a high 80 win team. Like the pace they're playing at, it's not 110 or anything, but they're playing, since they've had those ads, at a very high pace that a team that should make the playoffs. And, you know, Semien's going to get a huge bag. He's going to get a lot of money. A team's going to let him play shortstop. This is sort of the thing is, you know, this can go a lot of different directions, but I feel like, and this is just a gut, I don't have any sources, not that anybody assumes I have sources. I did figure out who Moorcroft was, but, you know, it feels to me like the contingency on Semien is like, Bo has to play second base because Simeon's going to want to play shortstop.
Yeah, I don't know if I agree with that. I understand why that is the thinking.
It's just a gut.
And like, obviously the out of context Arash Madani searching for clicks tweets.
rough week for Arash with the...
Don't help that. But I also kind of think that like... I don't know. Is if he gets the same money here and he likes the guys and can win playing a hitter's park all year, I can see that being enough a selling point. I don't think he's coming back, but I don't think it has anything to do with being a shortstop. I think someone's just going to give him too much money.
Yeah. I tend to agree it feels like he's deservedly going to get a ton of money because it is what you would call a show me deal that he is currently on, and he has shown people that he is clearly capable. Again, there is some ballpark stuff. It's a hitter's ballpark, and it was in a even hitterier's ballpark in the two minor league ballparks they played in. But, geez, 45 home runs is 45 home runs for a middle infielder. That's
still the most ever. Premium. It's the most ever by a second baseman. There's no
yeah.
There's no way to be more hyperbolic about Marcus Semien's season.
And has played every single game and hasn't DH'd even once. I was looking at that because we were doing obviously every week I do Blue Monday, and this week we are at sort of the junction where you look at the stats and you're finally getting the picture of the whole season, right? I'd completely forgotten that Bo is going to be like a 25-25 guy, like 25 home runs, 25 steals. It sort of snuck up on me. And, you know, the totals these guys are reaching. And some of the real standouts for me was like the games played for Bo, the games played for Vlad, the games played for Semien. Like it's 158. Or 157. They have five left. It's amazing the durability and the fact that they've been able to rely on those guys every single day. And if you were interested, we are going to put out Blue Monday this Monday on the main feed. If you're listening to this on main feed, because I'm Sunday night, we're gonna know one way or the other, and I would hate to go a week without episodes. So Monday morning, look for that new sports film thing. Geez, what else do we have sort of to get to this team? We have some, there are your usual, the bullpen usage can draw some questions. We saw Pearson last night in the spot before Richards. It turns out Richards ends up tipping the home run and Pearson ends up going 1-2-3. So what can you even say? But, it would be nice if you had, Meza has been very good. Simber has been very good. Romano has been very good. I don't blame Richards for the home run.
He stands basically on his knee.
A changeup, below his shin, and he hits it out of the park, no doubt, with just pure power. There hasn't been anything too egregious in the last little bit. There are always going to be some small things here and there, but I don't consider him to have held them back this week. It's just hard. This is one of those things, right? Every base runner against in this week has felt like a small cut across the chest.
And you and I are not Charlie or Toronto bullpen defenders by any means, but none of the losses in the last week, I think you can put on pitching.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can talk about some of the pitching against the first game of Minnesota, and maybe you can make the argument that bringing in someone like Castro last night to get roughed up is just waving the white flag and you should be trying to keep the lead as small as possible at all times. But the fact of the matter is they had three hits last night and that's just not going to do it. And they scored one run on Friday against Minnesota and that's not going to do it. As much as I would love to blame the last 7 days on Charlie or the bullpen, there can't really be any blame directed anywhere but the offense. Unfortunately.
If you really wanted to, Jake, you could give one little blame to Randall Grichuk for fucking standing on Lourdes Gurriel's fucking hand. How in the world does that happen? The guy has been the absolute catalyst. And I know obviously part of it is I guess Lourdes is to be blamed for putting his hand in somebody's running path or throwing path. But oh my God, does that ever like a throw something at the wall moment for me? Holy jeez.
Yeah, that was a lot of people are saying it's a lot like Pilar injuring Tulo in 2015.
Sure.
And I agree with that. The problem is that happened in August. This happened in the final week when Gurriel was absolutely on a tear. But yeah, that was
God.
If they don't, if they don't make it, that's not to blame directly. But that's definitely going to be a moment where you can look back and be like, oh yeah, maybe it just wasn't going to happen this year.
Speaking of moments to look back, here's a fun game I played in my most meltdowny group chat last night. How many losses this year, Jake, can you conjure up just by saying like a title? I'll give you two, and I'll set you off on motion here. The Semien throw,
yep,
and the Palacios error. How many of those can you conjure up off the top of your head?
There's the Chatwood game.
There's the broken hand, as Jonah called it, which is Brad Hand just like walking in the game room. Yep.
There's a couple broken hands.
Yes.
Actually.
There's the Bergen debacle. How do you go to Travis Bergen here? Remember that?
No, I don't. But
it was pretty early. But
you can just
like,
say bullpen and like
yeah,
pick your poison.
There is a whole era that is like bullpen.
I mean, that's the thing, right? I think this is a rational thought I had before yesterday, which was the thing I like about the Jays making this run to make it interesting is that it makes it a lot harder for me personally to look back at the first 60 games or whatever and be like, if they had just won so many of those title games, as you're pointing out.
Mm-hmm.
Because while that's true and like had seven of those however many double-digit number of winnable games that slipped away been won, then they're in the playoffs already. And that's true. But I think at this point, because they went on that run, and because like literally 9 days ago they had a 70-something percent shot at making the playoffs, at that point you kind of got to say like, well, it's those games they blew don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I know mathematically that's not true, and I know just by like literal numbers and facts, of course they do matter. But also they're right there, and they were given the shot in the last week and this week. Those games somehow did not end their season. They've been given the chance. They end their season with two series at home. And like, yeah, the Yankees are playing out of their minds. Well, I guess that's the other frustrating thing. The Yankees aren't playing out of their minds. Judge and Stanton are playing out of their minds. But, you know, they've got two games against the Yankees, who they've won the season series against, and three games against the worst team in the league. And at a certain point, I kind of have to look at it and be like, yeah, those early season games are really annoying. And yes, they inarguably did, quote unquote, cost the Blue Jays the season. But also, they have five games left at home, three of which are against the worst team in the league. And if they win those games, they're probably going to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I'm trying really hard to not dwell on the first half of the season.
It's a good job. It's a good job. And you raise very good points. And I would even add to that, as much as you... you know, as much as it is your nature as a fan to dwell on the losses like that, as you said, you then have to willingly be like, yeah, but they deserve to win the game against Oakland where they scored six runs.
Exactly. Or the two Baltimores.
You forget the absurd comebacks that they probably didn't deserve when they pitched like garbage and then suddenly they hit, you know, nine home runs. So, yeah, I think well said, and I think a good job of maintaining level-headedness because I am prone, of course, to slip, and I'm sure that will continue tonight and Thursday.
I think the Semien throw and the Palacios error, I think I'm more willing to hear as being like what ifs, just because they were sort of in the back half.
Semien throw is an all time like, not just like they would have won, but like there was literally two out in the ninth and it was a routine ground ball. It's quite literally a game they should have won 999 times out of 1,000. It's a game they win handily.
Yeah, but like you said, I also think there's so many things you can point to. The opposite, you can point to that first game against the Rays last week, where if the umping isn't terrible, maybe they make that comeback in the ninth. But also, that's all maybes. So, who knows?
They did do enough to put their fate in more or less their own hands, beating the Yankees, and again winning out against the Orioles.
All I'll say to finish this off, and this will be irrelevant by tomorrow morning, but hopefully in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
If they win tonight and tomorrow against New York, they are one game back of New York with three games at home against Baltimore when the Yankees have to play the Rays.
Yes.
And like, I know the Rays don't have anything to play for, but I'll take that every day. If that's the situation we find ourselves in Friday morning, as I sit here right now, I will take that 10 times out of 10.
And the Rays, whether they have anything to play for or not, will never not be the Rays when you play them.
Right, exactly.
They could, I don't think they could even on purpose.
I think it's at the Trop as well.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Boy.
Oh, no, it's in New York, but still.
It's hard to say anything other than I just feel absolutely sick to death about tonight's game.
They just got to win tonight.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even think about Thursday's game. A, half because Robbie Ray is pitching, which makes me feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Corey Kluber's not very good anymore. But they got to win tonight.
Yes. Absolutely. I think that's great. And, yeah, go Jays. I mean, I'm just hoping that a week from now, you and I are talking absolutely buzzing with excitement that they have just won the wild card game. Or to answer your point, and I say this having not with the security of knowing that it's 6 days away, no matter what. I think I would be okay. Not okay. I think in months later, come December, I think I would be able to say it was a good year. If they lose in the wild card game,
I think I agree with you.
Hell, if they finish a game back, I think I'd still be able to be like, yeah, you know what? It was a great year. But as of right now, I need them to win the wild card game and beat Tampa. That's all I'm asking. Small request. All right. That is it. I think we've got our bases covered, no pun intended, as all we can really do is talk ourselves in circles about the Blue Jays. We're going to relax by talking about TV, music, and wrestling on the other side after this. All right, let's take our minds off baseball for a minute here. We start off with one of the world's great distractions, the background soundtrack to our lives. Jake, as somebody who always has his pulse on the industry, what is your decision this week for your song of the week?
Oh, man, you know what? That's a great fucking question. Oh, no, I do have an answer for this. I thought one the other day, and I knew I had, and I forgot. And I'm only killing time right now so I can see. Yes, okay. So this week is a song called Everyone is Special. The band is called Abracadabra. They are I believe, Brazilian ska band. They put out their new album last week called Make Yourself at Home. If you have any interest in pop punk or ska at all, highly recommend it. It's really good. It's really fun. Good lyrics. Good ska. And nice to see that a ska band or a pop punk band breaking in from other parts of the world, mm-hmm. which I feel like happens, but not as often as you might think. I'm sure there's more, you know, in Brazil, but crossing over into North America, it's pretty cool. And absolutely. It's really good.
Match of the week. There's only one choice here. It's the American Dragon returning. Brian Danielson against Kenny Omega last week on Dynamite. It was a half an hour draw, but you could pretty easily say this is either the or a top three best free TV match in the history of the business. Brian Danielson, a guy famously in WWE recently as Daniel Bryan, the biggest story that company's had in the last little bit was him coming back from retirement from a neck injury. And there was sort of this concept of like, what is he going to be differently, because something that AEW is really important for is people who love pro wrestling, these wrestlers that are sort of finally getting their chance to really explore like their favorite things about it and be their truest self. It was sort of like, what is his version of that going to look like? And it is hard hitting, striking, top level endurance wrestling. It was an awesome half hour draw. Just thrilled to see him, thrilled that he's going to be back, and like his idea of what his character is and who his character wants to be is that he believes he's the best wrestler in the world, and it's entirely about being the best wrestler in the world and having great wrestling matches. And I've often said wrestling is at its best when it is simple, and just great pro wrestling is as simple as it gets. So I was thrilled to see it. We move forward, and Jake, I have a ton of stuff here for what you've been watching on television this week. You said you had something you were going to save for me as well, but I have multiple things that I've been watching. I will let you go first because I want to hear sort of what direction you were thinking of taking.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about The Circle.
Okay, good. Yeah, me too. I will say this. I think we're where are we, 10 episodes in? We are right before the final eliminations.
Okay.
They're about to be the final vote-offs.
We just started watching the final episode before we started recording, but we have not finished it, so I don't know who wins.
Okay, so we don't know. We basically, the last episode we watched was the prom.
Okay. We know who like the final group is what I'll say.
Okay, I will say this. I think this season of The Circle, I have 3 points. Number one, I think in terms of the way the game was played, this was the best season yet.
In terms of just like knowing what they're doing kind of thing?
And game mechanics. I loved the fake account. I loved the cloning. I love that like they really have a good idea of how to sort of take things to the next level. And it was very clear that there was like alliances and sides. And
the fake account was amazing.
Brilliant. I also think this year had what I would consider the best and the worst players I've ever seen in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jackson is the worst player I've ever seen in this circle.
Really?
The person didn't say anything ever.
Yeah, that's true.
And I also didn't like Daniel.
Daniel
didn't start a single conversation. There must be a limit. Listen, obviously, as with all reality TV, you have to take a grain of salt of that, like, this is obviously not 100%. Like, you know, the fact that one person gets invites from two groups at the same time, that sort of thing. Like, it's not all 100% legitimate on the level, but and there must be like a limit to how many conversations you can start per day. But like, to go on The Circle and then just hang out all day and not start conversations is absurd to me. Absurd.
It kind of felt like, I don't know, it's reality TV, so I feel like it's all characters to a certain point.
Correct.
But like, it did feel like the show didn't really know what to do with him.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's the show's fault.
Totally.
Or sorry, I'm not sure that's his fault. Mm. I think that's more on the show than it is on him. But I agree with you though.
I thought James was expert.
Loved James. Immediately.
James came in and was like, here's what I have to do. Here's how I have to treat people. I was like, this is the guy that this show's been waiting for forever. Is a James.
Well,
come
so
in and play it like a game.
We've talked with Cassie and I have talked with this watching the last few seasons of like, I know you've seen the show.
Why would you be on if you hadn't?
And like, I know that they have to like act surprised about things they know are coming. I understand that. And that's fine. But like, yeah, exactly. Like James came in, he's like, I know how this show works, so I'm going to play it that way because I'm trying to win. That should be how everyone plays the game.
Yeah. So I thought a real high and a real low. But let me tell you this. Perfect airplane television. Oh, my God. Perfect airplane TV.
Oh, like, I could.
Flawless. 4-hour flight, three episodes of The Circle, then departure and takeoff. A breeze.
That is great flight TV. You're absolutely correct.
A breeze. Brilliant. So good. I'm glad Circle was your pick because absolutely. And it was on before and after the Jays game yesterday. It's sort of my port in the storm.
Yeah, I think that's. I was hoping to use it for pregame relaxing today, but we're recording this, so that timing's not going to work.
Yeah, I forgot that I couldn't record after the game with my wrestling brain tonight. Going to be a tough one to watch both of those shows at the same time, but I will be doing it. And my other show that I need to tell people about is Heels.
Oh yeah, I hear very good things.
Heels, again, and people. This is one of those things where sometimes we talk about this. Is we are people who like, you know, the TV has to be sort of bad for us to really enjoy it.
Right.
Heels is so good. Heels is unbelievably good. I cannot believe a show as good as Heels, that's about wrestling and the way that this is about wrestling exists. Really impressive. Stephen Amell is a guy who has been in a wrestling ring. He's wrestled on pay-per-view before. You can tell he legitimately loves professional wrestling because they are telling a really cool, really good story, great characters, great storylines. As somebody that loves pro wrestling and loves, like, I don't know how to properly quantify this, like B prestige TV, like not...
Okay, yeah.
So like not that prestige TV, but sort of that it's on Stars. So it's sort of your perfect level of like it's a serious TV show with production value, but it's also like doesn't insist upon itself too much. I have not had as much fun watching a show as I have watching Heels in a very long time. And everybody I know who even tangentially likes wrestling has been really into it. And Abdul Malik, who is the Socialist Raptor online, who is a legit screenwriter and has had movies screened across the world, said that it's the perfect pilot, he said. He said the, almost the hardest thing in the world to do is to write a perfect pilot, and he always comes as close as he's ever seen. So, yeah, anybody should be watching Heels. If you're even tangentially involved in enjoying wrestling, Heels is a great show. And you could know nothing at all about wrestling. They do a great job of giving you just enough information to appreciate what's going on. But, like, my wife is into the Heels. We're watching Heels every week. We saved an episode so that when I got back from vacation, we had a Heels the day we got back. So we had that. Like, I was looking forward to that the whole time on the flight. I was like, can't wait to get home, rest, and then watch Heels. I can't wait. There's two episodes left in the season. I think it's a 10-episode season, and we're in episode – or no, it might be an 8-episode season, and we're at episode 6. One of those two.
I hear it's very, very good.
It really, truly is. I'm thrilled, and I'm just so happy that a show like this got made. Really cool. Frank Sabatka from The Wire is in it.
Oh, he's great.
He steals every fucking scene that he is in.
What's his fucking name?
He's Wild Bill. Hancock on the show.
Like, oh yes, okay, Chris Bauer, right? Yeah,
great. There you go, nailed it. So yeah, Heels. The strongest thumbs up I could possibly give a television show is Heels.
Interesting.
We watched. We're still watching The Morning Show, which gets more absurd every week. I'm thrilled. Thrilled. We go to the mailbag. Lauren with the first question, which a version of which is a paradox used to disprove God.
It's a Simpsons joke, I believe, isn't it?
It is as well, yes. A Simpsons joke based out of true philosophical question. Could Jesus microwave a burrito so hot that he himself could not eat it? This is derived from the could God make a rock that he himself could not lift?
Oh, okay. I don't know.
And the paradox is, if he couldn't, then he's not all-powerful because he can't create something. But if he could create it but not lift it, it means he's not all-powerful because he can't lift it. Basically the same principle here. So the question is, could Jesus microwave a burrito so hot he himself could not eat it? And I will say to you this. I don't think Jesus had access to microwaves.
Or burritos.
How old are burritos?
I mean, they might have been old, but they certainly weren't in, like...
The Middle East.
The Middle East.
Right.
How would they get there?
Yeah, true. You wouldn't have many people. Let me look up the etymology of burrito.
So am I. I know it means little donkey.
Yes, but sort of like when's the... Not etymology.
That around 1500 BC.
Okay, so...
Oh, no, sorry. BC. That's before the development. The Maya civilization used corn tortillas as early as 1500 BC to wrap foods.
Mm-hmm.
The modern burrito is not till 1890... is not known. Precise origin in the 1895... it's in Spanish. I can't read it. The burrito or taco was identified as a regional item from the Mexican state of Guanajuato, as defined as, that's in Spanish, a rolled tortilla with meat or other ingredients inside, called cochito in Yucatan and taco in the city of Cuernavaca, and in Mexico City. Folk history is a man named Juan Mendez sold tacos in a street stand during the Mexican Revolution. So yeah, way after Jesus is the point.
So like
1895 is the 95. First mention.
I was going to say, because if it was 1500 BC, it's like, that's a shot.
There's been like forms of it.
Yeah.
But like we've discussed this, every culture has like their...
Right. Every culture was like...
Sandwich wrapped in a flat bread.
Yeah, everyone was like, we should put meat and cheese on bread. Everyone was like, hey, we should melt cheese. Everyone was like, hey, we should make a bunch of appetizers a meal. Everyone was like, hey, rice is good with food. So everyone figured that out around the same time.
Yeah. But no, I don't think Jesus would have been around burritos.
What toppings would Jesus put in? I think Jesus feels like a purist. Beans, meat, rice.
I feel like he might have a fish burrito because he was all about making lots of fish, right? Wasn't he?
Baja.
Was that a Jesus thing?
He's fish and bread, yeah.
Fish and bread, yeah. I feel like he'd have fish tacos or fish burrito.
I gotta tell you, he sounds Portuguese. You go to a meal with Jesus and only gives you his fish and bread? That's Portuguese. It's Portuguese. tell me I'm wrong. And what did they have to drink? Red wine that he made himself? All right. You're telling me? You're telling me Jesus wasn't Portuguese? All right.
I think you'll probably find people in Toronto who will agree with you.
James Nielsen, if you lived in Europe, do you think you'd be a fan of your local lower division club or whatever the closest top tier team is?
I think the fun of living in Europe is you get to do both.
From the Europeans that I know, the people that I know, generally you do pick one of both, right? You have your I think I just nailed it. You have your Toronto Maple Leafs and your Toronto Blue Jays, basically.
Right.
The IBL,
yeah.
Maple Leafs, I mean.
Yes, I see.
So you go to Christie Pitts and you're like, oh, the Jays are the Blue Jays beat Kitchener. I mean, I hope the Maple Leafs beat Kitchener or whatever, right? And if they do, you have a great time when you party. And if the Maple Leafs ever played the Jays, you would assume the Jays would beat them like 17-0. So when the Yankees come to town, you say, oh, go Jays over Yankees. But you would also want the Maple Leafs to win their division and play well.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think the passion is flipped. Like, right. I think the lower tier team would be the one that you ride or die for.
I got that.
Like, and then if they were to ever make a run in like the FA Cup or something, the League Cup, it's the business. You know what I mean?
Absolutely right. Absolutely right. So yeah, I think we're right on that. I think it would be a slice of both. Prairie Jays, what do you do during stressful games at home? Is a great question. For example, last night I found myself cleaning the house and listening to the game instead of watching. I was in full pace and mumble mode from the fifth inning on last night. I was pacing and mumbling. After the first four innings, I was like Moorcroft 96 made me laugh so hard that I was joking about that until like the fourth inning, because it was so funny and so distracting. And then the Yankees scored that run on the throw, and I was on my feet for the next 2 hours. Like, so pacing, unfortunately, pacing and mumbling. What do I do to take my mind off it? Unfortunately, nothing. Send tweets, basically.
Yeah, I send tweets and I sit closer to the screen and stare.
We're not well.
No.
Yeah, I wish that I had that sort of like, how do I turn my brain off sort of thing, but not good, not good. Too obsessed. Michael Hoad, one of the greats, one of the goats. In honor of Moorcroft 96, who's your favorite/least favorite famous sports fan?
Least favorite's got to be the foul ball or the home run ball guy.
Oh, Zach Hampel.
Yeah, he's got to be the worst.
Here's an old school one. Here's an old school one. Real heads will know this, Jake. Do you remember Tampa Bay Devil Rays era? There was a guy you could hear clear as a bell on the broadcast at all times.
Oh yeah.
And he hated Eric Hinsky. Hinsky was like, yes, his number. That
I
guy.
Do remember that guy? That guy was so annoying.
That to me is where like really hating the Trop comes from. Is like you. Literally, the games were like unwatchable. That guy was so annoying.
Yeah, that was really bad. I also gotta say, maybe just because the game was so frustrating, but Moorcroft's up there.
Yeah,
I was like, once we learned that he was just a weirdo, and like wasn't doing it for any sentimental reason, I was furious.
Yeah, man.
Obviously, putting a lot of the game's emotions onto him, but I was pretty mad.
Yeah. Absolutely right. Yeah, Moorcroft is definitely up there. Final question. Aaron Valois, what's the worst part of moving? Aaron Valois, moving to the one with the starts of the B. Burlington. Thank you, honey. What's your worst part of moving? I hate all of it equally. Do you have any terrible moving story?
It's all bad. Moving sucks.
Yeah, it is all bad. I think the worst part of moving...
Like, when I moved into my Montreal apartment,
mm-hmm.
It was in a three-story, like, walk-up kind of building.
Right.
That was old and did not have air conditioning. It was just, like, 35 degrees outside. And trying to maneuver couches up narrow wooden stairs when it's extremely, extremely hot inside is no fun at all.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree that pretty much all of it is the worst. I think my least favorite thing is sort of that that 2 days before where like a bunch of your shit is packed up and a bunch of your shit isn't packed up. So like half of your living space is full of boxes and shit, but you also have to have half of your stuff out so that you're still living. That's such an annoying period because inevitably either you need something that's already packed up or a bunch of shit is in the way of something you need. And you're just like, I want this to be one thing or the other. I hate being like Schrodinger's cat right now, you know?
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean.
Anyway, it's like an
impatience and a weird like restlessness that comes with it.
Totally. And also finding apartments, brutal, or houses. And my bad moving story, when my wife and I moved from downtown to uptown, we had an apartment with two elevators, just two elevators, and we booked our elevator for the morning we were moving. And the night before we moved, there was a fire on the top floor of the building. The penthouse had a fire. It's like the watching this all happen and like piecing together what it meant for me was like such a painful moment. So the fire alarm goes off on the top floor, but it was like legitimately a fire. There was a stovetop or oven. It was the guy's kitchen caught on fire, and the sprinklers went off. But it's a penthouse, so it's the only thing on that floor. So the sprinklers then flood the apartment, and it's the top floor, of course, it's the penthouse. The flood came down the stairwell, and the stairwell was beside the elevators. So the flood knocked one of the elevators out. And again, as I said, it's only a two-elevator building.
This is giving me anxiety as your...
Only a two-elevator building. So you obviously can't book one elevator if one elevator is out. So we lose our elevator booking. And now it's like, I guess we're carrying our entire apartment down the stairs. Bed, couch, all of our boxes, everything you could possibly need. Luckily we were on the third floor, and luckily we had hired a friend of mine to help us move. So like, and there was an access, there was a back door we could use near our place. So it could have been worse. We could have been on a higher floor. It could have been a longer walk, but arguing with the building people about like, well, can I use the elevator fucking once to get my mattress down the fucking stairs? Can I use the elevator once to get my bed, to get my couch, to get something that doesn't fit in the elevator or in the stairwell? It was absolutely infuriating because you do everything right and they're just like, well, there's nothing we can really do. And you also do see their side. It's like, yeah, I do see it. I do see like you can't really rent us the elevator, but also like I need to move out of here today. Like I don't also have a choice. So that's my terrible moving story. And I would agree pretty much everything is bad about moving, but the in-between stasis is the low mark for me. And that's it for the mailbag. We were going to close things up, answer whether we are sad or not sad, and then we're going to watch some freaking baseball once more after this. Just a reminder, if you are loving this, there's more Sportsfeld to be found, patreon.com/sportsfeld, and there is going to be an extra episode of our weekly Blue Jays show, Blue Monday, coming out this Monday, recapping what happened in the Blue Jays season. I would love very deeply for that to also be a wild card preview. That would be fucking great. I would love that. And then that would make Sportsfeld next week a wild card review. And here's the thing, if the Jays don't make the wild card game, I'm probably not going to watch it.
Once the Jays are out, I'm not watching baseball.
I couldn't. I like 2016, I did not watch anything.
I spent a long time. I mean, part of it was because we worked in sports. It was my job. But like, other than the years of the score, I spent a long time being like, oh, well, if like my team goes out and I don't watch the rest of it, I'm not really a real fan kind of thing.
Right, right.
I haven't watched a second of a sport after my team went out in the last like 4 years, and it's great.
Yeah.
I want to watch the NBA finals without the Raptors in the bubble? No, absolutely not. I want to watch the Red Sox and Yankees play a wild card game?
No chance.
Thank you.
There's literally no chance that I would watch Red Sox Yankees wild card. No chance. Absolutely not. I would have my head in my hands too deeply to watch it. So yeah, once again, patreon.com/sportsfeld. You get Blue Monday on the main feed as well, but you're going to get it Sunday night if you subscribe. As well, mailbags, lookbacks, all that fun stuff, all the extra content. Patreon.com/sportsfeld. You also get ad-free versions of this show. So if you are like, I love the ads, stick around. But if you don't like the ads, easy way to get rid of them. Anyway, Jake, all that leads me to say, are you sad or not sad for this week?
I'm not going to lie, I don't have an answer this week.
Not yet. We'll find out soon.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to pretend that my emotions this week are entirely tied up in the Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing that can be, barring some sort of unbelievably amazing thing or some horrendous personal catastrophe, nothing's going to change that. It's all baseball for me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna go not sad. Always great to refresh, to get out, get on vacation, see some stuff again. Everyone was so kind to me in Vancouver. Getting to do Block Party was like a real, like, super cool moment. I mean, again, immediately I was like, I gotta buy a microphone. We gotta completely redo this whole thing.
Sort of shit out.
Yeah, it's a beautiful studio, and they do a great job. And John and Stefan and Dan, such great hosts and such good people. And my guy Josh treated us like locals. Let us borrow his car and let us drive it to Whistler without having to rent. Wild, wild generosity. And we went out to dinner, had the best ramen I've ever had in my life. What was I, Jake? What was I doing not eating ramen regularly? Are you regular ramen guy?
Oh yeah, we love ramen here.
I was like, what am I doing? I'm saying to myself, how have I not eaten ramen? I unbelievably good meals. Ramen, gyoza. We went for Vietnamese. Really nice, really, really fun, and a beautiful place. And enjoyed Squamish, BC as well. A really, really nice place. Yeah, really nice, and really glad. And it truly is, as you were 2 weeks ago. You just come back like, yeah, you know what? It's a little easier to deal with the small things, knowing that I just got that R&R and relaxing. So a not sad for me from that one. And that is it for another week. We are so thankful for you sticking around. Hopefully we don't sound too stupid because the Jays, hopefully they make, here's the hope every time we do this, right? Is we hope the Jays make us look dumb in a good way.
It's all we can ask for. The only thing I've ever wanted from sports teams I love is to make me look stupid, but in a good way.
Absolutely right. So hopefully that's the case. We will talk to you next week to pick through either the corpse or tee up Blue Jays versus Rays in the American League Division Series. Either way, it's going to be a ton of fun. We will talk to you then. In the meantime, we thank you so much for listening to Sportsfeld.